from In His Shoes Ministries welcoming you to The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Vazquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. No, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week free of charge, either as a podcast on epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, and now on Blueberry. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 234, you got it. This is a podcast about life and love, about spirituality, and looking at life through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. Polished up for today. We call that polished look, Armadoxy. And we're welcoming you to take a look with us, to take a step with us. This podcast is being brought to you by the good folks at epostle.net. That's Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. Hey, if you're ready, let's take the next step. Can you hear the excitement in my voice? Yeah, you know something's going on over here at Epostle. We're at Epostle West today in Glendale. It is a beautiful day. I mean, it is drizzling, but it is still beautiful. But even more exciting, the excitement in my voice. Guess who's sitting across from me? Yes, Ken is back. Ken is visiting. Great to see you here today. He's going to be engineering today's show. I'm so glad he's with us today. Always a pleasure to see you. And he tells me that Canada is like... it makes him want to come back down here. Anyway, great to have you with us today. Hey, how did you all do? Did you all survive? Did you all survive Black Friday? What was that all about, huh? What an incredible marketing scheme, huh? Somebody decides that we're going to call this Black Friday. We're going to call this the day after Thanksgiving, a day that you can spend your money. And people lined up, you know, at the middle of the night. It was Thanksgiving Day. That was our last podcast. I was with you, and then we went and had a great Thanksgiving with my wife's family, and we were driving back, and my sons and I, we were in a couple cars, so my sons and I, we were in the car, and we're driving. We drive past a Target department store, and the lines going around the building. We passed by a Best Buy, lines going around the building. I mean, people were now not only going in early in the morning, but on Thanksgiving Day, some of these stores, the strategy to spend your money a little bit early. And I guess they succeeded. I mean, you know, what is this all about? But you know what? This is all part of the Advent season. You know, we talk about Jesus Christ being, well, the gift on Christmas, right? But think about it for a moment. What is his gift? His gift is life. And you think about what does the economy do? But I believe I've heard a statistic here in the United States that 10%, something absurd like that, 10% of the economy is based on the sales that are made during this season, during this Christmas season. And okay, so you want life? Here it is. Here's the money too, you know. Anyway, if you survived Black Friday, you got a chance to live through Cyber Monday. Another exciting one, huh? I don't know what it is. Somebody named it. Hey, we'll call this Cyber Monday. Another opportunity to spend your money. I like it. Okay, I'm going to give you the next step Thursday. This is Next Step Thursday today. You get another opportunity for you to spend your money. Would I do that to you? No. Oh, God. We have so much to talk about. We have so much to talk about today. Not only did we get through all of that hoopla, but it's coming up on us, too, on the Christmas area. But we are in the period of Advent in the church. It's a time of preparation. So what better way to prepare than, well, to put a smile on our face, to think about some of these absurdities. And in the next few weeks, we will be discussing a lot of these absurdities. But here we go. Are you ready for the ultimate one, which in the midst of all these opportunities to spend money, okay, this one really kind of blew my mind. But then when I thought about it, I said, why should it? Okay, are you ready for this? How about a vending machine? Yeah, we know, they make life convenient. How about a vending machine that vends, are you ready? Caviar. You don't want caviar? How about escargot?
More products are being sold in vending machines. The latest to appear at L.A. area shopping malls are touch screen machines vending caviar.
How does it strike you, a vending machine selling canned caviar?
Odd. it's different.
Had your attention, though, I guess.
Yeah, it did.
It's silly.
Yeah, it's a little scary.
I like that the prices, they range anywhere for caviar from under $50 up to $500, depending on what kind you want.
Oh, yeah, and I would put that in a vending machine.
Wait, they sell other goodies.
They don't have just caviar. They've got truffles and escargot, too.
Snelly, now, yeah, even better. I'm getting hungry.
At Burbank Town Center, Vita Sophronicus, KNX 1070 News Radio.
Yeah, you like it? I mean, you don't want caviar? There's escargot over there too, right? Anyway, my good friend Linda Maxwell, she's been on our show in the past from We Care for Youth. She alerted me to this. This is in the Burbank Mall where they have We Care for Youth has a store over there. And there's this vending machine. She said that every news agency in the area was there to take pictures, to photograph, to interview people using this machine. And they are using it. We will put a link to that story on our show notes today. You can read more about it. But, you know, it shouldn't surprise us. You get off of a plane, you know, I guess it's a matter of taste, right? You want caviar, but you get off a plane these days and you see these vending machines in the airports having iPods and expensive speakers and ear speakers, headphones. And you go, well, okay, yeah, I guess, you know, vending machines are quick ways to give up your money and for them to vend to you things that we cannot live without. Whether they are headphones or whether they are caviar. Anyway, another side of this whole Advent season I just wanted to present to you. Now, the other side of it, of course, is did you hear the audio blog last week? So many of you commented on it. I appreciate it. That, of course, Anush doing lessons from Bob. And so many of you enjoyed it so much that she's been encouraged, and I've asked her to do another piece. She's going to be on today, coming up in a few minutes. We've got Anush with another audio blog that I know is going to touch your heart the way this last one did. But that Lessons from Bob, actually, it was a real special one. And make sure you check out her blog, because she's actually writing these down, because people were saying, well, those are beautiful sayings, and can we share them? Yes, you can definitely share them. They're on her blog, and all of them are tied in with our show notes today, of course. So that's coming up in a few minutes. Now, where are we going to go today? Well, there are so many places that we can go, and I wanted to talk to you about something that, well, just might interest you. It just might. The art of belly dancing. Middle Easterns know a little bit about that, huh? The art of the striptease. Now, before you get grossed out or excited, as the case may be, and whether you decide to hang out for us or not, it's coming up right after the song of the day, and I think it'll interest all of you, because something happened this week that just needed to share with you. Before we go there, and I want to do the song of the day, but before that, I have to share this with you too, because this week I purchased the latest edition of Thick as a Brick. Now, those of you know Jethro Tull, what an incredible group that has kept a presence for almost 45 years, doing progressive music, just incredible music by a leader named Ian Anderson. And 40 years ago, 1972, these young years, my young years, we're tuned into an incredible piece of music, 45 minutes in duration. It was called Thick as a Brick. And just a few months ago, we had a chance to go and see them live. Actually, here Ian Anderson redo Thick as a Brick and play a second part to that, which was amazing in itself. But just last week, they released the 40th anniversary edition of it, and they remastered it.
Really don't mind if you sit this one out. My words but a whisper, your deafness a shout.
It's great to have you with us, Ken. You put a smile on my face. Yes, anyway, they remastered Thick as a Brick, this 45-minute song, and actually gave a few versions, all nicely compiled in this nice little booklet. Just wanted to do a small little review that, you know, in these... It actually was the mother, what he later referred to it as, the mother of all concept albums. Because you got to remember, back in the 60s, 70s, you had, well, the phenomena that came out from the Beatles, moving from the idea of track recordings to these concept albums, to like Sgt. Pepper's. And, you know, there was a lot of music that was experimenting with ideas of not only music, but of poetry, and putting it all together. And this little spoof came out where... Ian Anderson credited to this 13-year-old little kid, Gerald Bostock, writing these intense, the mother of all, so to speak, concept albums and a poem that lasted 45 minutes with its music and everything. But it has an enduring quality. Now, that's what I wanted to talk about. You know, that real art, really, I think that's the measure of real art, that it does have an enduring quality, that it is not just something that passes with time. And I just felt very, very fortunate to be able to listen to this kind of music and really make it such a big, important part of my life. Anyway, we'll put a link on our show notes if you're inclined to learn more about this phenomenal band, Jethro Tull. Yeah, I know. Ken's looking at me like, should we let it go? Yeah, let's make today's podcast the song of the day. Just like, let's run a song for 45 minutes. Anyway, it is great having you here. No, we're coming up to the song of the day. I want to share with you something very, very serious for me, and that is the situation that's taking place in Gaza, the situation that's taking place throughout the world, especially in Syria, and, well, just about everywhere. You know that part of the Inner Shoes ministry is bringing awareness to these situations, because walking in the shoes of people, of other people, begins by understanding their pain, understanding what's going on, and in fact, that is the redeeming value, so to speak, of walking in another's shoe. It's that you start understanding who they are, what's going on with them. And certainly as Armenians, as people who have gone through genocide, we should absolutely be the first people who are reacting to situations of injustice, situations of genocide, as tragic and let's say, on the extremes of genocide. I'm going to share with you a couple of blogs that were put together by our good friend Ari Agopian, and I will put those on our show notes today, so please do check them out. And I think his passion for carrying these stories is evident in the way that he reports these. But it's very important that you understand what's going on over there. And the part that I want to share with you is that, you know, last Sunday I made some comments about the situation in Gaza, and I guess someone in our congregation came out and started talking about, well, you know, the Jews are very important. Israel is very important to Christian theology. And I know that there's that mentality, especially that you find within the religious right, you find it in evangelical Christians, and this idea that somehow we have to preserve Israel, the country, because it is there that the second coming will be, and that is the place that everyone is going to be looking at. And I think that it's very important that we understand within our concept of Armenodoxy and Armenian Orthodoxy, and basically in Orthodox theology, but you need to understand Israel is not the place. Israel means the people of God. And the people of God, as Christ tells us, are not confined to any ethnic group. And St. Paul later on goes and says that there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither male nor female. In other words, what he's saying that it is not bound by any type. In fact, the kingdom of God, the God's people, are of all people. People who hear the word, Jesus tells us, and are able to work on it, are able to actualize it. So the invitation is to everybody. This idea of chosen people being a certain group of people is not a concept that is real within Armenian Orthodoxy. Within Armadoxy, I want to say that it's very important that we're able to separate this. And so the question was, well, we as Christians, we as Armenian Christians, shouldn't we be aligning ourselves with Israel, the country? And no, you're not supposed to. I mean, you may want to, but it's not an imperative within Christianity. Okay? You may want to, you may understand politics the way you want, but in Christianity there is no politics. It is not about political power. It's about understanding yourself as a child of God. And you align yourself not with countries, you align yourself with God. What does Jesus say over and over? Seek first God's kingdom and everything else will come into, will follow. And I've said this throughout. You hear this over and over and over and over in all of our preaching and all of this ministry. I've shared this with you how many times, and we've talked about it at various events we've been to, and we've talked about this idea of how the Armenian church and the relationship between a church and state are. And there are many people that will argue and they'll say that, well, okay, it's part of the state. No, it isn't. It has to be the kingdom of God. It has to answer to even a higher authority, to use that phrase, a catchphrase. It has to answer to something higher than government, higher than the people that it serves. So I want to come back to that in a few minutes. I want to leave you with that thought right now. We're going to be listening to a very special piece for the Song of the Day. This comes off of an album called The Way. It is Armenian sacred music. It is called The Sea of Life. And it has different components to it. I'm playing to you, for you, because it's one of those kickback songs. You kind of like close your eyes. And of course, don't do that if you're driving, right? I have to precaution people on that. Anyway, listen to this piece called Sea of Life. And you could just hear the different parts of it, the different parts of life coming together. It is off of an album, The Way, Armenian sacred music. That is the Hover Chamber Choir of Armenia off of an album called The Way, Armenian Sacred Music. The name of that song, Zov Gensahuis Hanabazis Alekots, translates roughly to the sea of life always tosses me about. If you think that that's Armenian blues in a sense, but it is much more, of course. And I hope you took advantage of maybe just closing your eyes and letting the melody, the different instruments, including the human voice, just take you around for a while. Because when you really put it together, it's just an incredible petition to God that, God, you're in my life. That, yeah, life takes me, and there's this, there the waves, and there's a flow of life, but I know you're with me, and there's a power in that. So I hope you were able to get into the mood, because I think we need that mood right now, that mood swing right now, because we're going to be talking about something. Although at the beginning I shared with you, I said about the belly dancing. Yeah, there is some belly dancing element to it. There is actually some striptease element to it too. But it all comes down to something very, very important, and that is identity. You know, in the Middle Eastern cultures, and unfortunately, and I really mean this unfortunately, within Armenian cultures, a lot of times we will see belly dancing presented as Armenian culture. And it's not. It's not. There. It is not Armenian culture. It's part of other culture. But, you know, it's okay if you're an Armenian, you are susceptible, as anybody in any culture is susceptible, to the flow of society. And there are we are in a multicultural world, and certainly all around us there are different cultures you can absorb from. But because the Armenians have lived in the Middle East, and especially after the genocide, being in many of the Middle Eastern countries, you find that at many Armenian events, it is, you'll see maybe an entertainment. You'll see an entertainer come out and do a bit of belly dancing. And what is that about? What is that belly dancing? Well, you have the dance of the seven veils. And it is the intrigue of what is underneath those veils. Yeah, thank you, Ken. It's actually good that you played that little piece, too. You understand through the tonalities that this isn't Armenian. It's more akin to Middle Eastern music, and certainly, you know, Armenians having lived in the Middle East, at least in the last century since the time of the genocide, we pick up a lot of the cultural anomalies and cultural idiosyncrasies of the places that we've inhabited, like, which is true of everybody, you know, anybody. You come here in America and you talk about the big melting pot. Well, what is that melting pot? But to understand that, you know, we are in a pluralistic society, and there's bits and pieces that we take. I mean, just the phenomena of Armadoxy, the phenomena of what we're doing over here, kind of experimenting with the idea, can we really strip away those layers from the Armenian Orthodox Church and find what is the essence underneath it? And let's be honest, you got to be open. You've got to be open to the mystery of what's underneath. I mean, it may not be pleasant. What you find may not be pleasant. In our case, when you look at the Armadoxy, when you look at what Christ has to offer, yeah, it's beautiful. In some cases, people strip away the layers and it's not pleasant. I shared with you, yeah, I had to deal with some kids going through some drug issues. And what does that all come down to? It comes down to belonging. And you strip away layers and you find nothing. And that emptiness is not something that's pleasant. That loneliness is not something pleasant. And the same is true when you look at our faith and our understanding of identity. This is what we were kicking around last week on Compass. If you didn't get a chance to listen to it, it's kind of an interesting show. Well, I don't want to tell you it's like the absolute must listen, but it's interesting in its evolution of how the thoughts started evolving. It was interesting. It was just an open microphone, and we were kicking around ideas that, you know, you start off with looking for something, a purpose. You look for a belonging, a sense of belonging. And as you strip away the layers, as you strip away those veils, so to speak, you find all kinds of stuff underneath. You find things that are maybe not too attractive, maybe things that you're ashamed of. But what's the bottom line? It's yours. You've got to deal with it. You've got to deal with it. No one else can. And this is the truth whether you're talking about the nationhood, you're talking about your ethnic roots, whether you're talking about your faith, whether you're talking about your purpose in life, who you are, the personhood that you have. At some point, you take responsibility for what's underneath those veils, and you start saying that, okay, this is mine. I need to look at it and take a hard look at it and understand myself within the context of the bigger picture. Yes, belly dancing is one type of music that is played out there, but it is part of a bigger, broader spectrum of music in itself, of entertainment in itself, right? So too, being an Armenian is part of a bigger picture. So too about religion. It's part of a bigger picture, and that's the picture of humanity. That's religion. When you get to Armodoxy, you're saying, okay, I have this faith over here, but I understand it to be something not only belonging to this world, but something bigger than the world itself. And this is where we get into some of the confusing ideas when we come to the issues of Israel. I shared with you one of the comments that was made by one of my parishioners following my sermon. Well, you know, every time a child is baptized in the Armenian church, after he comes out of the water, there is a hymn that is sung. I better not sing it today. I don't know. I don't want to turn you off by my voice. Listen to it. Listen to the words. Let me recite the words. Okay. Asfaz choset zavi parzans. The God has spoken from the heights. Now the second paragraph of this hymn. Nor Israel gochetzak I Christos. You are known as the new Israel in Christ. You are now a part and parcel in Jarankagitz, I guess, the inheritors of Christ. The new Christian is the new Israel, the new people of God. And it is so fitting. Here is a child being presented into the church and is baptized. That child, we make too much noise about the child, about original sin and stuff like that. Forget about all that stuff. Go down to the essence of what the Sharagan is implying here. The new Israel is born, the new people of God. That child is a part of the people of God. And so when you look at Gaza, don't put these, don't associate it with the things that are happening out of Bible, out of Christianity. These are people who are hurting people out there. These are children of God as well. Everyone is a child of God. How dare we start saying, and how dare we imply that God is taking sides with one group or another? How dare we do that? If you want peace, you have to start thinking in terms of peace. You can't think in terms of let's go kill people. Let's go rape the land and the people. Violence will only beget violence. And when Jesus says, put away the sword, because he who lives by the sword will die by the sword, that is not a threat. That is not a threat. He's not saying that, okay, if you're going to pick up a sword, I'm going to come and kill you. No, he's laying down a law. That's an axiom. There's a truth in that. If you want to live by the sword, you're going to die by it. So why don't we start opting for peace? Why don't we start talking about ourselves as children of God, as children of a collective, as children of this all-powerful, all-knowing force in the world, which is, of course, the force of love. You know what? You look at it and you say, okay, this guy's just like shouting out some stuff. I mean, where's the practical application to this? Well, you tell me. The practical application is in finding peace. You're not going to find peace going about things the way we're doing right now. I mean, it's impossible. You're not going to find peace by going out and killing people. And the absurd idea that somehow the Bible, somehow the absurd idea that God is intending to be on the side of one group of people as opposed to another group of people is laughable. And we need to be able to say this. You need to be able to say this. And this is why many times when people come up to me and they say, I want to read the Bible. You want to read the Bible? I want you to start off Matthew chapter 5. I want you to start off with the Sermon on the Mount. Listen to what the words of Christ are. Now, with that as the base, start reading the New Testament. And understand that the highest law that comes to us is the law of love that Jesus Christ offered to us. Now, you want to start, if you put that as a base, and now that's the trunk of the tree, okay, now go on and read the stories that you want to read in the Old Testament, but understand them as stories. Don't understand them as literal truth, because you're going to get confounded. It's absurd. And so it was, we were discussing with this lady after church, and she said, well, you know, this and that. I said, how could you say that? I says, take a look at the story of Noah's Ark. And I like using Noah's Ark because every Armenian identifies with that, because you've got this Mount Ararat out there. The Ark lands on Mount Ararat. So here we go. We got two cases. The Garden of Eden is where life began. And when things didn't work out over there, okay, God started again in Armenia. I'm sorry, Garden of Eden. If you look at Genesis chapter 2, verse 10, it gives the description of where it is. And you put it out on a map, it's in Armenia. The second time God gives life to the world is at the top of Mount Ararat. And where else is that but Armenia? And so I like using the story of Noah's Ark when I talk to Armenians, because they're all aware of it. And so I asked her, I says, well, what about the story of Noah's Ark? And she goes, what about it? I says, well, what kind of story is that? You're telling me that everybody in the world was corrupt except for this old man, Noah? She says, yeah, that's what the Bible says. And this is the danger. This is the danger of believing that it's a literal truth. Because all of a sudden now you have to start wondering, what about the kid that was born last week? What about the kid that was born this morning? What about the kid that was born 2 weeks ago? What major sins, what did they have? Why were they so awful that they were wiped off the planet? Then you start wondering and you start saying, okay, maybe what the Bible is trying to say is a truth, that we have to live within God's covenant. We have to live within the laws that God prescribes to us. Oh, no, okay, we can all accept that. God gives us a certain set of instructions to love, to take care of our planet, to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another. That's far off from the literal translation that, okay, there was an old man and God said, okay, build me a boat, Noah, and put every kind of animal on it. And, you know, God, and Noah picks up all the animals and he lets them all lie down in there. And all of a sudden there's this giant flood and everybody's flooded. And the reason for everyone being flooded, including that little kid, including the kid from last week, was because they were evil. Well, that's going to turn off. That's going to turn off a lot of people, just as it would turn off somebody if you go up and to them. And this has happened too many times, unfortunately, where you see people who have suffered the loss of a child. And they come up to them and say, God must have loved your child so much that he took him away. What do you think that's going to say? What message is that? What message of hope, of compassion, could there possibly be in something as ridiculous as that? We have to get to the point where we understand we live in a world where we are all brothers and sisters. We are all united in this bond that we have with one another. We are all children of the heavenly. And we call it different names, we come from different traditions, but it all comes down to how we can survive and get along with one another. You strip away the layers, you take off the different veils. Underneath, we've got to realize that we're all the same. We all come from a common ancestry, and that is the human ancestry. We all have a common spirit, and that is the Holy Spirit living within each of us, giving us the opportunity to reach out to one another. And throughout life, people will stray from this idea. Throughout life, people are given many choices. Perhaps they're not even given choices because of the set of circumstances. What is that? How does that separate them from each other, but not from God? St. Paul says this so beautifully. There is nothing that can separate us from the love of God. Yes, now think about that for a moment. Many theologians have pushed the envelope and said it. Does that mean also if you reject God? I certainly believe that. In my experience as a priest, I've heard countless people who've rejected God. And at first it would hurt me, it would, but then you realize that life circumstances, the loss of children, seeing wars, seeing just injustice in their lives, has drawn them to these conclusions. And for me to sit there as judge and saying, you shouldn't do that, God's going to, let God judge these people. Remember that in Holy Scripture, there's only one person in the entire Bible that is given a guarantee that that day they will be in paradise. And that person was not baptized. That person was not, we don't even know if he believed in Jesus Christ. We don't even know if he confessed Jesus Christ. All we know is that on the cross, he was right next to Jesus Christ. And he was being crucified for some capital offenses. So it's very easy for us to assume that he probably killed some life too. He turns to Jesus and he says, remember us. In other words, Lord, have mercy. I'm not going to judge. I know I'm wrong. Lord, have mercy on me. And Jesus says, this day you will be in paradise. That's what's underneath the layers. That's what's underneath the layers. That person that can reach out, that could humble him or herself before God. And once you humble yourself, you realize that those layers that you have on top of you, those seven veils that disguise who you are, aren't necessary. Because the person underneath is a beautiful creature. The person underneath is somebody that is loved by God, that has been validated by God. And God, in fact, loves you so much that he places you in a world where you have an opportunity to share in that creative process by creating life all around you, by creating those relationships, by loving people, and finding yourself in your ability to love and care for others. Last week, we heard Anush Avicik doing a piece called Lessons from Bob. Got a lot of compliments on it. I asked her to do a second one. This is an audio blog from Anush. I think we're going to call it Seeds of the Pomegranate, this little section. Would love to hear from you. But for right now, let's hear Anush.
The nest, half empty or half full. This past year has flown by. I honestly don't know what happened to it, but here we are almost to the end of the year and it's time for reflection. This year was a milestone in our family. Our daughter got married. Of course I'm thrilled, but I have to say that no one ever trains us moms for the empty nest. Sure, everyone asks, how are you doing with the empty nest? Or you hear about empty nesters remodeling their rooms, but until you've gone through it, you don't know what it's about. My daughter and I are very close. I was a single mom for many years, so it compounded that closeness. We have gone through everything together. School, cancer, mother-daughter camping trips, you name it. So as her wedding day approached, I know we both started anticipating the big changes that were going to be coming up. It says in the Bible regarding marriage that a man shall leave his mother and a woman shall leave her home. We all know this, right? In prep for leaving home, the week before her wedding, I took off from work. I wouldn't trade that week for anything. It was our time together. We moved her things to her new home, all except the essentials until the wedding day. We got her unpacked and situated, set up her kitchen, and spent mom and daughter time together. And one of the days, we just had a good old cry. We knew the wedding was just days away. We knew she was marrying her true love. We knew it was the right thing, at the right time, but all of a sudden we were hysterical. And it wasn't panic or nerves about the wedding, it was just about change, about life, about growing up. But that cry did us both a lot of good, and it seemed that it was what we really needed. Yes, things would be different, but the love between us would be the same. We wouldn't be living together, but hey, there was always unlimited texting, right? So the wedding day came, and it was like a dream. She was beautiful in her wedding gown. My son-in-law was dashing in his tux. The wedding ceremony was beautiful and meaningful and blessed. The reception was fun. Everything went off without a hitch, and off they went on their honeymoon. And then we get to the empty nest. I tried very hard to back off a bit. I wanted her to adjust to her new life and have fun on her honeymoon, so I was good. I didn't call or text, and the hardest thing was not hearing from her daily. I'd wonder where they were, what they were doing. And then they came home from the honeymoon, and it was even harder. At least while they were away, she had reason why we couldn't see each other. But back in town? I know it sounds silly, but you have your child with you for 25 years, and then in one day she's out of the house, all grown up, and a wife. Those 3 weeks after the wedding were the hardest. The nest was empty, and then Sunday came, and she said they were coming to church, and then coming over afterward. At church that Sunday, my daughter and son-in-law received and distributed the kiss of peace. Deadhide announced them as the newest family of our church, and I felt so happy to see them there together, participating, worshiping. After church, they came over for lunch, and I saw how happy they were together. Not cheesy happy, but just at ease and natural happy. And I realized something, that my daughter is right where she is supposed to be. It was her time to get married, and God blessed her with a wonderful husband who loves and cares for her. And the nest is not really half empty, but half full. Today is Thanksgiving. We just came home from my daughter and son-in-law's home. It was their first Thanksgiving, and they invited us over. It was a blessed day. There they were, working together to make the meal, making new traditions. My daughter is a nurse and works nights, and she had just come home in the morning to start cooking. My son-in-law had made the turkey and gravy, and they were working together to make everything perfect. The table was set, the Thanksgiving prayer was said. I looked around and saw my grown-up daughter, who will always be my baby, and her husband, and then I saw the bigger picture as well. My husband, her in-laws, and the grandmas, my son. Our family had grown and was full and alive. I am truly blessed. I will always be a mom. The bond that I share with my daughter will always be. And now I get to share with my new son. I am thankful for my beautiful family, the love that we share, and my nest, which is not only half full, but truly full and overflowing with love. This is Anush, wishing you a pomegranate day, filled with abundance and ripe with possibilities.
Anushavija, greeting from her latest blog about the nest. And now you decide, empty or full? How do you perceive it? Well, she just gave you this beautiful reading. Thank you, Anush, for sharing that with us. But now you understand yourself. You understand looking at yourself underneath those layers. What you just heard in this story was the peeling of layers. And underneath, there's something incredible. Something that you found. Because you see, especially during this season, between now and New Year, very, very difficult time for people going through change. Whether it's a change like moving, a change like having the empty nest, having a child that's married, or a change that you didn't want it to come. Perhaps a death. Perhaps beyond your control. The loss of a loved one. Very, very difficult. Because it's also compounded during the holiday season because it's a time of a family. It's a time of renewal. It's a time of looking around and seeing patterns that continue. Like you get to December, you say, oh, it's Christmas time again. One more time. But it's also a time that something is missing and you have to deal with that. And so when you peel away the layers and you try to look for something underneath, that sense of belonging, that sense of identity, you just heard what Anush did. And underneath, what was there? If not faith. You see, faith takes away the fear. So when you've got faith, you're able to understand, you're able to accept, you're able to see that nest as something beautiful. Not just empty, not void, but full of life. And that's a blessing. That's a blessing that comes to us, that God gives us. God gives us that opportunity to reach out for faith and to be able to look at our difficulties and challenges and say that we have arrived. We can get through. That God is with us, that faith is something that I see underneath all those layers, and it's what's really holding those layers, holding those veils on top of me. It's the one bond that connects all those different layers. When we talk about armadoxy, what are we talking about if not stripping away those layers? We better find what we're looking for underneath. I think we do. I think we found something very beautiful. Hey, if you agree, listen to what Susie has to say.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vodskin, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. We are now in the fifth year of broadcasting and heard on 6 continents. The next step is entering homes and communities proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution today. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, as well as Facebook and Twitter. There's even an app for your smartphone. We look forward to your participation and words of encouragement. Write to us 24/7 at feedback@epostle.net. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the next step with Father Vosgen.
Don't you feel like we're doing something good over here? Well, if you do, get involved. I'm just so proud of everybody. And Ken, I got to tell you, it is so nice to have you with us today. It's like the old days. It's been 5 years since we've been doing this show, The Next Step, and I really appreciate all of your responses, all of your feedback, and appreciate most of all your prayers and support. Keep them coming because it keeps us going. Thank you very much. And listen to what Susie has to say. You know, spread the news. Get it out there. I want to do a quick shout out to a dear friend. I've met him only once when he did a drive-by in Burbank. But that is Opgar in Australia. Opgar, we love you over here. And you're kind of like the poster child for Epostle because you remind us that, you know, we have to keep going because there's so many people who are tuning in. And so many people were united with us in prayer. But I do want to do this shout out because, you know, you always talk about the inspiration you get over here. But this morning we were inspired by what you posted. So let me share that with our listeners, okay? This is off of Upgar's Facebook page. Walk with dreamers, the believers, the courageous, the cheerful, the planners, the doers, the successful people with their heads in the clouds and their feet on the ground. Let their spirit ignite a fire within you to leave this world better than when you found it. I like that. I really like that. Thank you, Apgar. Leave the world better than when you found it, even if it's from down under, right? I want to use this to just platform off of our upcoming Dreamers Weekend. It is the MLK Weekend. That's coming up January 19, 20, and 21st. It's going to be held in Big Bear, California. If you can get out here, it is going to be a weekend you will never forget. It is a weekend that is a retreat. Plenty of time for introspection, plenty of time for learning. We're going to be together up in the beautiful hills, San Bernardino Hills, and hopefully there will be snow, but not snowing. There definitely should be snow there, but hopefully it's not snowing so we could get up there and come down without any trouble. But if you were looking for something to do this winter, and there's time to make your plans early enough, you can do it. January 19, 20, 21st. There is more information on our website, inhisshoes.org. We will also put a link on our show notes. This is the annual retreat we have, part of In His Shoes Ministries. It is now the 10th year that we've been doing this. This is the 10th annual Martin Luther King Jr. retreat. We focus on the works of the great civil rights leader, talking about advocacy of love, talking about how we can protest the evil, how we can make a difference with our lives to leave this world better than when we found it. Please join us if you can. Okay, again, January 19, 20, and 21st in Big Bear, California. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as we enjoyed producing it. And you got to believe me, I enjoyed it today, having the old gang back here. On behalf of that gang, on behalf of Susie, our producer, Vahe, our webman, and Ken, our engineer, honors with her pomegranate seeds, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week, as well as on the web at epostle.net. That's Apostolic Evangelism for an Expanding and Electronic Universe. So join us again next week when we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Putting on the Ritz.